Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. That war is, of course, a multifaceted thing. It has dimensions of it that are clearly in the kinetic space, as they say, the old-fashioned warfare, kind of military warfare, and then many others as well. A man who has been studying and practicing warfare in both the kinetic sense and others is our guest. I'm very pleased to say for a full hour. He is Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, United States Marine Corps retired, now a senior research fellow specializing in defense programs at the Allison Center for Foreign and National Security Policy of the Heritage Foundation. He, for two decades, served in the United States Marine Corps, engaged in, as I say, both the old-fashioned kind of warfare and what goes into it, the planning, the logistics, the detailed work that enables our military to prevail, please God, in the future as it has in the past. Dakota Wood has graciously joined us in the past to talk about all of these matters of preparedness, where the military is today, where it will likely be in the future, and has, as I say, very generously agreed to talk with us for a full hour about all of this and more. Dakota, welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Right. It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, let's start this hour-long drill down on where we are and where we're likely to find ourselves in the future by talking a bit about the threat environment. As a strategic planner, this is something you know is the kind of backdrop against which these sorts of things have to be considered. Maybe we could start by sort of discussing several of the key vectors of the threat that we're confronting at the moment. The Secretary of the Air Force, I was struck by a comment the other day, actually allowed us how it sounded a lot like she was channeling Mitt Romney. Russia was the greatest threat, in her judgment, that we face today. Is that so in your judgment? And if so, why?
Well, it's almost a time horizon issue when you think about what's the greatest threat. For a lot of people, they'll think that terrorism is the greatest threat because it's immediate. You can, a suicide bomber can detonate a vest in Times Square, and that's, that's a bad day. Others will say, look, these long-term profound threats, such as posed by Russia or China because of deep nuclear arsenals and a large state apparatus that can harness, state-level power and military forces that affect regions is a more worrisome threat because of its scope and its duration. So I think you really have to separate these into kind of an immediate, midterm, and long-term set of issues because our response mechanisms to those differ. Terrorism, law enforcement, special operations forces, there are ways that we can deal with that. Diplomatic alliances that deny a terrorist element a sanctuary in which they can plan, train, and launch attacks. But you need a very large military force built over years, very expensive to maintain, to deter, stand up against profound threats like Russia. So it's kind of one of those, it depends on the nature of the issue. I'm most concerned about these larger, more profound threats like Russia, that you have an aspirational Iran that could serve the same kind of challenge in the Middle East and all that that implies. And then certainly China is seeking to be the regional hegemon in the Asia-Pacific region. So that's where I wish we would tend to focus. And if you can get the big power competitions right, then a lot of the other things can be sorted out.
Let me ask you about each of those in turn, if I may, Dakota. Starting with Russia, the deep nuclear force capability is something that most of us have long since forgotten about, or at least stopped being preoccupied by. And yet, there seems to be growing evidence that Vladimir Putin is not only rhetorically threatening the use of nuclear weapons, but it seems is making a concerted effort to practice in their use. And therefore, when you combine that with the kind of investment that the Russians have been making for, well, decades now, but particularly of late, it would add up, it seems to me, to be a quite ominous situation. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, he's really trying to keep the eastern part of Europe essentially destabilized, and the western part with Germany, France, Britain, in other words, intimidated. And a mechanism to do that is to have these very short notice snap exercises where large numbers of forces are mobilized in proximity to, say, the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Belarus, Ukraine, to do very provocative actions in the Baltic Sea with submarine movements into territorial waters of Sweden and Norway and others. And those that analyze the types of things that Russia is doing, interpret those as also the things that you would want to do if you were to employ a nuclear weapon. So you're kind of practicing all the mechanisms, without actually introducing a particular weapon into that exercise. And it's clear telegraphing. I mean, he's testing his own forces. What can they do? But it's sending a message to powers in Europe and then broader. What was that? How does it influence actions in the Middle East as well and other things? So very aggressive. Invested a lot.
Let me ask you about Sweden. You mentioned Sweden. The chief of the general staff in Sweden, as you may know, Dakota Wood, responded to some of these exercises and threatening conduct by the Russians, saying he thought Sweden, this nation that has long been proud of its stance as a neutral, would be at war sometime in the next few years. This is a really stunning sort of change in the geostrategic environment, if he has reason to fear that. Let me turn to China. You have alluded to its ambitions as a regional hegemon. Give us a flavor of the kinds of capabilities that the Chinese are putting into place that would enable them to not only aspire to that, but perhaps be able to enjoy it, if not actually be able to project power quite a bit beyond their region.
Well, you have rhetoric, you have written items like white papers and doctrine, you have organizational indicators, and then you actually have material capabilities. So previously, in years past, China was pretty much inward-looking, concerned about domestic security issues, border integrity. It's always dealt with kind of a restive hinterland, and its military, the People's Liberation Army, was a direct arm of the Communist Party and was very much focused on this internal and peripheral security. In the past year or two, though, the China has become much more outward-looking. So the white paper that it issued in this past year, its recently announced reorganization of its military departments and what their duties and tasks are, and then its investment in its military capabilities all indicate an outward-looking, more expansionist military perspective and a geopolitical perspective. So as China has matured in its economy, it's become more dependent on external sources of supply for energy, like oil, for example, that comes out of the Persian Gulf. So if you see where China is at on map, and you look at all the water space that leads back to Iran and Saudi Arabia and other oil producers, it has a very long, vulnerable sea line of communication, a SLOC, that extends through the Arabian Sea, around India, Bay of Bengal, Malaysia, South China Sea, et cetera. And so it's concerned about that. So it needs a navy that can protect its economic interests. It needs an outward-looking military that can coerce its claims in the South and East China Seas. And it's being very, very muscular in how it invests accordingly. It has an aircraft carrier. It's building a second, improving its submarine capabilities, continuing to improve its long-range missile capabilities, and it's fielding its own latest-generation military aircraft, largely through cyber espionage, that's acquired trade secrets and designs, et cetera, from the Americans. with all these cyber attacks and intrusions. But they're very muscular and very outward and very aggressive, and that's what countries in that region are concerned about.
We're going to talk more with Dakota Wood of the Heritage Foundation, the editor of a marvelous and very, very valuable resource, the 2016 Index of U.S. Military Strength, about China and about other adversaries this country faces and what we had better be about doing to contend with them, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.